morning once again.
Yes, it's a dim, dark morning in Wisconsin.
Oh, it's nice here. I see blue sky, and it looks like it's nice and cool outside. I'm in my nice, cool basement. It was hot as balls last week when we had no power for 9.5 days.
Let's say it's cool now.
Yes.
Right.
It got cool just after the power came back and we could put the air conditioning on.
How about that?
So now we just have the windows open. I spent 9.5 days with no power. My town of 11,000 people, and 50% of them had no power when Isaias, whatever it was, came through. I was one, my block of 11 people. We were 11 of the final 15 to get power back. It's bad.
What is this? Some sort of power mafia that do you not like pay protection money or something?
I don't know. There's a big stink going on right now because apparently day two of the storm, what they were saying on the news is that all the senior leadership team of the local utility company, their towns all had 100% power restored. And we were looking out the window, you know, pleading for trucks to come by so we could throw our bodies in front of them, make them stop and take the widowmakers down that were hanging over the power lines.
Jeez.
So it's been fun, but an interesting outcome of all that. So I have a generator, but my beer fridge is not on the generator circuit.
Horror.
I know, isn't it? I had to open the fridge and let it, you know, let the ice melt off the little freezer compartment and let it air out. You don't want to leave it closed that whole time. But I was, you know, bringing some beer, you know, a couple cans and bottles at a time and throwing them into the regular fridge, which was on the generator. And I just noticed this morning I'm getting kind of low. I think I drank a lot last week.
It's amazing. Stress does that to a person.
It does.
Right?
It does. And that's including the fact that you got me into botanical gins. You and Joe, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a lovely, lovely thing.
It is. It is. So somehow I got into that and drank a lot more beer than I usually do. So I can't even remember what we're going to talk about. That's the kind of week and a half I'm having.
Nice. It's nice to know that all it takes is, you know, a week or so without power and Greg folds.
The funny thing is, this was a week removed from when we would have been at Boy Scout camp for a week without power. And that wouldn't faze me. But being in my own home, there's something about sitting in your own living room and it's dark and you have to use a flashlight and you're tripping over extension cords that just, it feels wrong.
Right.
It feels very wrong. Oh my. That and sitting in a car behind the library, stealing Wi-Fi with a laptop trying to get any work done. And you're welcome, everyone. I loaded the YouTube video in the last couple podcasts, mooching library Wi-Fi. So you're that important to us.
That important. Mm-hmm. We appreciate your effort, Greg.
Well, yes, I'm glad that you do. I appreciate your appreciation. So, speaking of appreciation, two new patrons, Gus and Carl, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you are digging through the back catalog and catching up on everything you've missed over the last 80 episodes.
We know Gus is.
We know Gus is. Yes.
I've got to write a novel to answer some of his questions.
He has a lot of questions with a lot of big words, which, just like your big words, I question their validity and their spelling. But, you know, they're there. So he's either trying to catch us in a lie or he actually knows what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to opt for the latter. I'm going to assume good intent and that he knows what he's talking about. And we will have fun exchanging ideas as we always do. That's the whole idea here is community and creating a group of people who enjoy talking about all this crazy stuff. So thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. I assume you're gentlemen. We don't know if those are your real names. Those are the names you gave us. So Gus and Carl, wink, wink, if that's who you are. Good to meet you.
Very, very good to meet you, yes.
So I think we've had a few weeks without any science-y.
Joe's wasn't science-y enough. Well,
Joe's was very science-y.
Technobabble.
All I remember from Joe's conversation is the gin, which now that I think about it was off mic, so no one listening knows what I'm talking about. But anyway, yes, that was science-y science, but field science, plant science.
Oh, okay.
And I think we've had some conversations lately on the Discord about plants.
We have. And just in general, specifically around lupulin glands, where all the good stuff is.
Tell me.
Yeah. The thing that sort of spurred this whole idea of a topic was a comment saying, what color should my lupulin be to gauge harvest? That's what spurred my email my text to you, Greg, saying, don't people listen to what we talk about? Well, how many times have we said this? You can't do that, right? You can't, as Dan was so fond of saying, you can't feel dry. So like when you're trying to determine what your moisture content is in the dryer, it's not rocket science, right? You weigh it, you dry it down more, and you weigh it again. Mm-hmm. So much like with gauging for harvest, you do the same thing.
You know, and I think with something like that, it's one of these where the inverse doesn't ring true. You can feel wet.
Right.
So you know when it's definitely not done, but when you feel dry, well, it could be done, but there's more you've got to do. And I think with color, I imagine it's the same way. There are things that can look quite wrong, but right. There's no one thing that looks right.
That's correct. And I think, you know, this idea too of, well, stupid internet and all the opinions everybody says, you know, it's like, oh, you can judge a hop cone for harvest when it feels light and papery, or the bracts start to open up, or the lupulin on the inside is golden and not green. And it's like, you know, okay, those are all morphological traits that coincide, right? They're highly correlated with cone maturation. Notice I didn't say ripening. Cones don't ripen. They're a flower. They mature. They die. There's no ripening process there. So we're really looking to find that peak of cone maturation, because on the other side of that peak is not a gentle slope. It is a cliff. And as soon as you go a little bit too far, things go very badly for that cone very quickly.
And isn't it a cliff on the front side as well, where too early a harvest and you've also got a problem? Maybe
yeah,
it's less of a problem?
Well, sort of. So the worst thing that you would end up with a too early of a harvest is you'd end up with something that really doesn't have a lot of hop character, as one would describe it, because those lupulin glands haven't finished filling yet, which is what gives them that color. So if you look at a lupulin gland early in the season, say just after full on cone set, where you've actually, you know, you're out of burr stage, you've got a cone. If you tear it apart and you look at under the bracts and the bracteoles specifically, where the ovary is, that's where the lupulin glands are going to collect, right next to the strig. And you're going to see them as, if you can even see them at all, they're going to be translucent green. And they may actually be, they usually form sort of these spherical pyramid kind of shapes. And it's a trichome. So it's a modified hair like you have on a peach, right? On the outside of a peach, that's mm-hmm. a trichome, the fuzz. So this gland is developing, but it isn't really filled with anything yet. If you harvest early, you're just going to end up with something that smells, people say smells green, you know, the wet hop character. And that's mostly coming from the hexanols that are in the plant tissue, like the leaves. And that's all you're going to get. And so that's the worst thing that's going to happen. If you go off the cliff on the other side, past maturation, that's when you get what we call the OG, the onion garlic. Things have oxidized rather quickly and to quite an extent. That doesn't get better. It will ruin a brew. Certainly a lot of that can flash off if you put it in a boil. Like, so if you're going to bitter with it, you could do that and not really have some of that character coming through. But certainly most people aren't looking to use their hops in that fashion when you're, you know, talking about how sexy they are and right around harvest. So dry hopping is the way what most people are looking at. And that is a bad, bad deal. You're going to have oxidized aroma compounds, which is where that onion, garlic, thiol nastiness is coming from, and other spoiling characteristics. Your lupulin or your alpha and beta acids will be oxidized, if you measure the hop storage index, it'll show spoiled. It's just no good. You're not gonna have a good time. That's kind of my diatribe on the cliff. But you're climbing the slope through maturation, right? After cone set, the flower's developing. That cone, its whole goal is to mature far enough such that the ovaries can accept, or that the ovaries are developed, and that it could be pollinated and start to set a seed. That seed maturation in the ovary is, if it were pollinated, you could track the rate of seed development, and that would correlate very strongly with the rate of lupulin gland filling. Those glands are going to fill regardless of whether there's a seed there or not. But that's why I said they're correlated. They're not necessarily connected in terms of you must have this to get that. We look towards climbing that slope, that maturation slope, and that glandular trichome filling. So I'm thinking here, because I want to talk about when you get to the peak, right? And people say, well, when is that peak? I don't know. That comes with a lot of baggage. It comes with a lot of how long does it take to get to the top of the slope, and how do I know how do I know when that is? And there's a lot to unpack there. But this idea of looking at lupulin to tell you magically when it's time to harvest doesn't exist, because there's other factors that you have to look at. And the best that we can say about when that time to harvest is by dry matter. That's it. There's no other easy button. That's how we do it. The best gauge of that impending cliff drop-off is measuring dry matter content in your cone. So as the dry matter content starts to go up, or conversely, the moisture starts to go down, that hop is in its starting its what we call senescence phase, senescence slope, and is a very, very steep downward slope, almost a cliff. You know, unlike a fruit as it's, quote, ripening and producing ethylene gas and all these other sorts of things that are associated with fruit ripening, that's also a part of senescence, but it's generally a much shallower slope down to rotting. Flowers don't see that.
I don't know. I can't keep a banana in my house.
Right. Well, banana's a fruit, and it also kicks out gobs and gobs of ethylene gas, which is what drives senescence and over-ripening to the point of rotting. So, yeah. You got to eat them faster.
I suppose I do.
Yes, you do.
Now you can wrap the top of a banana to hold that gas in, or to do, I assume it's holding the gas in, to keep it from rotting as quickly.
Well, if you don't want to keep the gas in, because if you keep the gas in, it's going to ripen even faster. And I don't want to get into fruit ripening because it's a very complicated process. But for flowers, I mean, flowers will also produce some ethylene gas as part of their senescence process, their programmed cell death process. But for hops specifically, you don't get an easy button to say, yeah, the lupulin's supposed to be this color, I'm going to pick it like a tomato, right? You can tell tomatoes conveniently have a lovely color indicator that you can go out and pick them and be like, great, this is a good tomato now. Now, you don't get to look at the lupulin and say, okay, it's not quite the right shade of yellow, so I'm going to wait a little longer and it's going to get darker and more, quote, ripe, and I'm going to leave them hang longer. No, 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 no. No, you're not going to get that. Based on your environmental conditions, they might not get golden yellow, right? Based on the variety, it may not get, you know, one variety may get darker lupulin than the other. So that's a really, really dangerous metric to use to determine harvest timing. Dry matter, dry matter, dry matter, people. That's what it's all about.
So no tricks, no easy buttons.
Nope.
Dry matter.
Right. Now, as you get more experienced in your hop yard and you've seen various seasons, you know, and what the weather can do and how they dry down, you start to get a sense for all of those, I call them morphological traits, right? What do they look like? What do they feel like? Does their shape change? And you start to correlate those things with what you know based on the, like, dry matter measuring that you've done to say, yeah, these are about ready. But it's not like you go out there and say, I've been doing this for 10 or 15 or 20 years, and you can point at those plants and say, they're going to harvest tomorrow. No, you're still taking moisture content measurements, I was talking about. So, yep, there is no easy button there. And you can look at cone featheriness or paperiness or lupulin color as a sort of a gross sense of season progression. Like you would look at those glands in July and they'd be, you know, greenish yellow and maybe kind of flat, as we would call oblate spheroid. Oblate
spheroid, yeah.
Yes, oblate spheroid. And then as they start to fill, they kind of puff up and they turn into, if you look at them under the microscope, they look like almost like tetrahedrons as they start to fill up into this diamond pointy looking thing. And that, again, will be correlated with your drop in moisture content, you know, indicating harvest. But you could go way too far and say, yeah, they're kind of yellow, but they're not quite yellow enough, so I'm going to wait because they're going to get more yellow, you know, like a tomato, let's say, or a banana. No, it doesn't work that way. For the love of God, take dry matter measurements. That way you know. Because as the moisture in the cone starts to fall and the dry matter increases, that is your sign that you started the senescence phase. So that cone, whatever in there, whatever in the lupulin gland, if they're aromatic or not, you're done. They're not going to get more aromatic if you leave them hang. Like people say, oh, they just don't smell as good as they usually do, so I'm going to let them go longer. Yeah, no. If your dry matter is falling, you're in the senescence phase and you're just about ready to fall off that cliff. So leaving them hang is only does bad things.
Yep. And you had mentioned, I think before we started recording, one of our earlier episodes was a little bit dead on the inside. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole idea of traversing the cliff. And when they start to die, get them down. Because that's really what is happening. They're starting to die.
Right. Yep. And in my case, here in South Central Wisconsin, or during that harvest timing, and I know some of our hopnologists are dealing with this too, it's just nothing but heavy dew all night and sometimes a lot of rain in August, and that's nothing but downy mildew factory. And so many times we're taking some varieties that are, you know, less tolerant to downy, late season downy, we're taking them early, because otherwise if we leave them up until the lupulin and the dry matter are tracking right, we're not going to have a crop because they're going to be garbage. There's going to be so much downy damage on them. So we'll take them early if we have to. Because I'd rather have a crop that I can get off that is maybe a little less, you know, pungent and aromatic than having a crop that's completely rotten. I don't know what else to do. I mean, that's just part of it.
Mm-hmm. And for us, when we were processing for a bunch of other growers, if we got a rotten crop, we gave it back.
Say, here you go. They'd say, well, one of my kind of impromptu things I would say that sort of became, you know, running joke with the group was, they'd say, well, what can I do with these? You know, you send them back, like, well, what am I going to do with these? And I would say, they're suitable for reapplication to the field. You know, make compost out of them. There's a ton of nitrogen in there. Put them back on your field because you're not getting anything out of them for brewing. Yeah, just no. Don't do it.
Yeah. Oh, that's not good. Very, very polite way of putting it.
Some of those hops, at least back in the day, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, you know, there would be growers doing nothing but production for extract. And because they didn't need to look pretty, because they weren't going to be pelletized, and they were just going for alpha extract, they look like hell. And it's just, you know, whatever, as long as I've got my alpha and they're not too badly oxidized, then I'm going to get paid on pounds alpha, not on pounds pretty.
Right. I guess that is what it is.
Mm-hmm. That's changed now. It's not so much because there's now so much more focus on extract for aroma content, where they are paying very close attention to where that peak is of that slope and where the cliff is, so that they can maximize the quality of the extract that they're going to get. So that's why I say back in the day, that's not really the case anymore.
So this actually dovetails well into our other topic, which was all about wet hopping and how long do you have to get binds to the brewer once you've pulled them down.
And before they're suitable for reapplication to the field.
Yes, before it's time to throw them back out there and start.
Uh-huh. Yeah, again, coming from our Discord channel, that was a question. I'm going to sell all my hops wet. And besides the discussion on how much, you know, I should be charging for them, which is a whole nother story. Even for our friends in the Southern Hemisphere, we try to talk about seasonal topics for those locations. And, you know, so that usually means twice a year we're talking about wet hopping. And not a fan, just saying. But it certainly is a interesting market for the very small grower, non-traditional grower, because it can make use of your whole crop if you target it correctly. It doesn't require, you know, nearly as much back-end processing, storage, and post-processing, drying, all that kind of stuff. So definitely an option. Not something that we dabbled in because it just was a logistical nightmare for us.
Yep.
The question is, I'm going to sell these as wet hops. How long do I have after I harvest them? Well, what does that mean? Well, what they're really saying is, how long can the brewer hold on to these things before they have to use them?
Well, are they really asking that, or is it more, how long do I have to get them in the hands of my brewer? Because once they're in the hands of the brewer, it's their problem.
Well, it is. That's true. You're very true. But the overall, I think, concept is, I'm going to harvest these things, and I kind of know they're a ticking time bomb in terms of quality degradation. So from the time I harvest them, they include, I'm talking harvest, like cut the plant out of the field. How long does the brewer have to use them? It's like, or what? They explode? No, it doesn't work that way, right? And so they're not that kind of time bomb, but they will go bad really quickly. And what does that mean, go bad? Well, what they do, certainly, they're little water bombs, right? What happens when you take a bunch of, like, grass clippings, right, and you pile them in a corner, all densified? In about 30 minutes, they start to compost and steam. Mm-hmm. Because that's what's happening. You're going through anaerobic decomposition because there's no oxygen. This plant material that you just chopped up or cut out is dying now. And so there's all sorts of processes that are going on there, but they're starting to leak fluids out of their cells. They're starting to, and if that fluid can't evaporate and the plant can't actually dry down, it's going to start basically feeding all these anaerobic bacteria and fungi that turn it into goo. And some of you may have experienced this where you're trying to maybe dry and you've got your bed packed too tightly and the airflow doesn't get down into one center or down through the center or maybe on the edges and they turn red and brown. That's composting. That's decomposition.
So what you're telling me is if my brewer wants their wet hops and they want them on a certain date and it looks like I'm ripe now and it's 2 weeks early, if I leave them up there, they're going to be dying on the vine. But if I pull them down, they're going to be dying in the pile.
Sort of. Mm-hmm. So you've got to time this. So it's a spectrum of compromise. Instead of answering a question that how long do I have to get these in my brewer? No, it's not you've got 24 hours, Kiefer Sutherland's running through your hop yard. Mm-hmm. No, it's not like that. What you've got is a scale of degradation that's occurring, of decomposition as soon as you cut that plant out of the field. That's why we dry, right? That's one of the ways to preserve quality. If you're going to get these into the hands of a brewer for a wet hop beer, honestly, every minute you wait after you cut that plant out of the field, you're compromising, quote, quality.
Right, right. I think the joke I made when we started talking about this was, if you cut them down and then ask, how much time do I have? You're all too late.
Yeah, there's that. So then people, I can hear them now, like, well, wait a minute. They're like, well, but brewers do this all the time, and the beer's great. Yes, it is. But it's this weird sort of, I don't know, what is it, inverse logarithmic decay rate, where, yes, every minute, you know, or moment after you cut that plant out of the field, it's dying a little more, right? But the slope of that degradation, within the first, let's say, few hours is pretty shallow. So yes, you're losing quality, you're losing, you know, and you have the potential for rot to occur, composting, certainly if you get them all piled together. Pretty shallow curve in the first few hours, but man, that degradation just increases dramatically after those first few hours, and that can be accelerated. That rate of degradation can be accelerated based on how you store them. So then people say, well, what if I put them in a cooler? That will help. But what do you usually do when you put them in a cooler? You usually cram them into a bag. That doesn't help. No. Because now you're crushing all that stuff together. It's decomposing. It's generating heat through composting, decomposition. And that just accelerates it, even though you have it in the freezer. We saw there was a grower that couldn't get his hops down. His dryer broke. This was years ago. And he's like, I've got hops. I got to get them dry. Okay, bring them down to me. It was like a 2-hour drive, right? And he brought this big semi-trailer full of bins full of wet hops. But he harvested them the day before. He's like, okay, we're going to put them in these big bins. And we're going to put these, like, he made like a chimney out of like wire mesh and stuck it down into the middle to act like a vent so that heat could escape.
Wow.
He put them in his walk-in cooler, which was at like 38 degrees or something like that. The centers of those, and these were like meter cube kind of bins, maybe a little bigger. But even then, the centers were that weren't next to the chimney of those hop cones in that 38 degree cooler, just in a matter of hours, right, hit like 110 degrees. Jeez. And it's this idea of just harvesting them. You're like, okay, here you go. I just got them to you, Mr. or Miss Brewer. And then have them in bags and just chuck them in the cooler for a few days until they're ready for them. Why? From a quality standpoint, just stop. You know, you're after at that point, you're, hey, I got a wet hop beer. It's a big gimmick. And, you know, it's like, no, you know us, everybody listens to us. We're all about quality. No, you've worked so hard and you've dodged so many bullets throughout the year to bring those cones off the bine and to a brewer only to let them sit even in a cooler and compost. No.
Yep. And then have the brewer blame you that the hops are not good.
Right. So then what does that process need to look like? Right.
Planning. You need to have that stuff sold and dated before you cut it down.
It's all planning. And it's a huge juggle because even the brewers that are listening to us, they're thinking, okay, well, what should I do then to maximize this? You need to have wort boiling.
Yep.
On harvest day. What? Well, how do you plan that exactly? You plan it. And, well, how do I know when harvest is going to be? Well, you talk to your grower. Well, you just said they may not necessarily know. Oh, they'll know based on their dry matter content. They'll give you a window to say, yeah, I think we're going to harvest, you know, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. You know, depending, but you get that close to it. For our wet hop beer, a day or two really isn't going to make much of a difference from a hop cone quality standpoint. You know, it's not going to gain that much more aroma or lose that much more aroma over a few days if you've targeted your window correctly. Depends on how close you are to the edge of that cliff, right?
Yeah.
So let's walk through this process as if we're going to hit the nail on the head. Okay, Miss Brewer, you're going to make this wet hop beer, harvest ale, whatever it's going to be. We're talking, we talk about this concept a month in advance, or sometimes even more, depending on how big of a deal you want to make out of this. And maybe we should have a whole episode on like marketing yourself around this kind of thing and make it a big deal. But anyway, so you've got this thing planned. And you're still in touch because the things you talk about in the tap room in April don't necessarily translate to August. So you're right. You're constantly following up with them to say, yep, are we still on for this? Yep, yep, yep. Because the last thing you want is to say, okay, we're harvesting on Friday. And they're going to be like, for what? Well, we're going to do this wet hop beer. Like, I got stuff in the kettles. I got no room for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm working on my Oktoberfest. It's July.
Yeah, exactly. So it's that communication. Assuming y'all are communicated and she's going to have tank space, then it's go time. I'll use our friend Ashley at Capital Breweries. Okay, Ashley, we're going to harvest these on Friday. And so she would have been planning her brew schedule around having the kettle open at that time. Now, they may not be going in as into the wort for bittering. Maybe she's only going to use them, you know, at Whirlpool or something like that. But still, it's the same. It's the brew day. You're ready for that at brew day. You're usually not putting fresh hops into a beer in a, quote, dry hop fashion because those hops are full of critters, and you don't want to necessarily spoil the beer that way. So they're usually going in on the hot side. The idea is that you're planned for it. They're actually brewing the beer when you deliver those hops. Yep. Period.
Yeah, it's all about the timing. There's no, you do not shop around your wet hops.
I've had
it does not work.
Yeah. I've had so many bad wet hop beers where it's just from the hops sitting around too long.
Yeah. And you've referred to it many times as grass clippings, which.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It's essentially what it ends up being.
Especially if they sit too long, it's like composting grass clippings. It's just not good. For those of you who are focused on selling your hops wet, and you're like, well, what the brewer does with them, Greg, like you just said, it's like, well, once it's in their hands, it's their problem. Yeah, no, it isn't. Because if they make, if you are banking your business on selling wet hops, and that brewer doesn't utilize those hops to the, maximize their quality, they're going to make some shitty beer. And are they going to do it again? Probably not. Mm-hmm. There goes your market or part of your market. So I think the grower is the expert in this scenario when it comes to using wet hops and brewing. To say, no, thou shalt do it this way because you have a highly, highly perishable commodity here. And it's not going to wait for you to, you know, yeah, we're not going to do that. We're canning today and then tomorrow we're doing this and then we're going to do that on Saturday. Or no. Right? Change it around. Well, we can't because we've got, you know, we don't have tank space. We have to empty those tanks. And I'm like, okay. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I'll dry these with the rest of my crop.
Right, because that at that point you've blown your window, mm-hmm. And there's so many folks I know right now thinking, "Nah, it'll be all right." Well, you know what? It might be for whatever your expectations are, but for my expectations, absolutely not.
And you know that could be a rabbit hole to go down. Just the fact that you know. Your sensory expectation, and for probably for many of the folks that listen to us on a regular basis, our sensory expectation is likely different than the general market's sensory expectation. So is a grass clipping laden wet hop beer still a novelty that a brewery can get away with and be successful with? Unfortunately, it probably is. It doesn't mean that the goal shouldn't be better than that.
In many cases, or at least most cases that I've seen, it's a it's a marketing gimmick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely is. It absolutely is. It's there's a place near me that does during harvest season they have a beer they call wet,
mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. It's a wet hop beer, and I've had it and over the years, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good.
Well, and it's different though, right? As compared to a seasonal beer like an Oktoberfest, which frankly could be made really anytime.
Yeah, I have, before we're done today, I need to complain about that just a little bit.
Yeah. But a wet hop beer certainly is special given its extreme seasonality. So I shouldn't call it a gimmick. It certainly is. I think it deserves a bit of that, you know, hey, we're doing this and this is special because it is special. If you could get wet hops all year round, which we know some people are trying to do with greenhouse production, mm-hmm. It becomes less special. It becomes another beer style,
yep.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But is a brewer set out to make another beer style just for the gimmick of it, or are they trying to make a beer that they can sell and be profitable at? I think that's the answer to that is yes, that's what they're trying to do. Don't treat the wet hop as, you know, an autumn fest kind of just a gimmicky thing, because it has a lot more potential than that. And I think it gets a bad rap. Because the quality's not there because of the extreme measures it takes to ensure you're going to get the best that you can.
It does. And to your point, it's all on the brewer to do it right. But it is on you to make sure they do it right and to not be not be party to a bad process if you have that kind of leverage and that kind of ability to say no. That's not easy to do. When you're trying to sell your crop and you're trying to get it all out the door, that's not easy to do. Sometimes, you know, you got to sell it when you can sell it.
It's all about, though, how you address them. Mm-hmm. Early on, make a plan. Make sure that plan is still on because, you know, when it comes to July and even sometimes August, and you haven't harvested yet, if they're not going to do it anymore, you still have time to pivot. It's after you cut them down and you harvest them and you haul them to the brewery and they're like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, well, if your communication flow is that bad, that's a whole nother problem that we've talked about many times. But if you know well enough in advance, heck, if you know a week in advance, and assuming you're drying the rest of your crop, then okay, that gets thrown in with what you're drying. So it's not the end of the world. But yeah, if you cut them down and drag them over there without checking in, shame on you.
That's all I got. What do you want to bitch about?
Well, you know, you mentioned Oktoberfest, and you and I have been trading some notes lately. I mean, I think we spoke already about the fact that there are pumpkin beers out there now. And pumpkin, yes. You know, pumpkin spice lattes from Starbucks are the quintessential false seasonality because that's just a bunch of chemical crap that they can use anytime. But when they come out, there's a party.
I'm curious where those pumpkin beers got their pumpkin from.
A test tube would be my guess.
Pumpkin essence.
Mm-hmm. But now we're seeing Oktoberfests.
Canned pumpkin, which is actually not pumpkin, it's squash, just by the way, just so you know, it's not actual pumpkin usually.
Well, I mean, real good pumpkin beer, it's the little sugar pumpkins. Mm-hmm. You roast them and you do them upright, which you don't see that often. And you certainly don't see in August. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We did the math on this last year when I was equally irate about it. I think I was more irate last year because I've mellowed in my old age. There's that, and now we've got Oktoberfests coming out, and it's August. I challenge each and every brewer listening to this, both of you, to make an Oktoberfest and call it an August fest when you put it out in August.
Do you think that's a measure of just people wanting this year to be over because they think, you know, as time goes by, the whole quarantine and COVID and business will get back to normal if they just wait long enough? Yeah.
I think that's a very good point. If we hadn't seen this year after year after year, I would say that was a very good point. I do know, I mean, everything I see these days, including just day-to-day at work, is talking about 21. Everything's about 21. I think people think that we'll be able to see the ball drop New Year's Eve and, you know, blow our little noisemakers and then take off our masks and go outside and hug everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's a point to be made there that folks are trying to hasten the year along. I did see something about the fact that we're going to see earlier advertising for the winter holidays because shipping times are so long now for all consumer and commercial shipments. If you want to get Christmas presents for your kids, you better order them now.
I better not see holiday spiced beer in October and I'm going to be pissed.
Oh, you will. Absolutely. Well, there was Halloween candy in the soup. When I went yesterday to refill my refrigerator, now that we have power back, did I mention we had no power for a week?
Mm.
When we went to the supermarket, it's full of Halloween candy. Now, I don't get me wrong. Reese's Peanut Butter Cup pumpkins are, you know, the only thing as good as those are Reese's Peanut Butter Cup Easter eggs because they're basically the same shape but with a face.
Right.
But, you know, I have no problem with Halloween candy. It's just that it's August.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we will see Christmas advertising, I predict, certainly before the end of September. And you're going to see a push on if you need to order things, get them now. Because who knows what shipping is going to be like as we get toward the end of the year. And, you know, good luck with your whole X days till Christmas. You know, you can still get this on Amazon Prime in 2 days. It's not going to happen.
They call me Captain Bringdown.
I know. But anyway, I'd be lying if I didn't say I'm, you know, I enjoy a good Oktoberfest. I feel like it's wrong to have one in August, but if I wait for October, they're going to be gone.
Yeah. I would say the things I associate with that, yeah, and certainly being in Wisconsin is not humid 85 degree days.
No, it's a nice fall day sitting outside by a body of water, hopefully. There's a certain rhyme to an Oktoberfest, and this is not it. I accidentally typed wet hoping instead of hopping and thought that actually has a resonance to it in terms of what we're trying to do.